5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Tommy and Robbie.
Youth, why are you talking like that with them stones?
I don't know, but I can't stop here, Pally.
Like the wallpaper sticks to the wall, and like the sea shark clings to the sea, like you'll never get rid of your shadow, you'll never get rid of me. Let all the others fight and fuss, whatever happens, we've got
them pages that sit in a book.
Mine.
We're close to the
shadow.
Ripples.
Strolling
wherever you'll find him, you'll find me. Just look. Closer than a miser, all the bloodhounds to miser me.
Closer than Smoggins to all of LA.
My shadow.
Closer than Ricky to confessing he's gay.
Not a soul can bust this team.
So we stick together like glue.
When
it's sleeping time,
that's when we rise.
We start to swing.
You think you're so just you.
Clocks don't chime.
What a surprise.
They ring. A ding ding. Happy New Year.
Me.
Not to repeat what I said at the start.
My shadow.
Don't need a large crowbar to break us apart. We're alone but far from blue. Oh, oh, oh.
Before we get finished, we'll make the town rock. We'll hit a few late spots and then a few more.
We'll start up in Strinkies and maybe Groucho. Life is gonna be a wow wow.
Can we do that again?
No, I'm too tired.
Oh, please, Rob.
No, I'm swung out.
Oh, come on. I'll give you some money.
I don't need money.
What about a cup of tea?
Not thirsty. I won't tell anybody you're gay.
Show life is gonna be a wow wow wee for my shadow and me.
The all new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is the New Panic Room, episode 220 on the... God, it is the 21st of January already. Wow, yeah, 9:30 Central and other times in other areas. I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm still getting used to living in a country with more than one time zone. So, it's just, I don't know. And, okay, it's been a week. And I tell you, we need to celebrate. I think obviously with what's happened this week, and it's the end of an era, literally. And I think this is probably going to be the last time I'm going to play this, which is a shame, really. We're going to miss him. I think we're going to miss the old Trump Maestro General. But here we go.
Nobody does. I really believe I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon.
Nobody knows the system better than me.
Nobody knows politicians better than I do.
Nobody knows. Nobody's better.
Nobody's stronger. There's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
I love the First Amendment. Nobody loves it better than me.
Nobody loves the Bible more than I do.
There is nobody that respects women more than I do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
Nobody's in the history of this country has ever known so much about infrastructure as Donald Trump. Nobody knows that better than me.
Nobody even understands it but me.
Nobody can do it like me.
Which is why I alone can fix it. I have Ivy League education, smart guy.
I know words. I have the best words. You're like, I'm a smart person. It's this. It's not my salesmanship. It's what? This. You know what that is? It's the brain power.
I'm getting thousands of letters and tweets that I was right about the whole situation. I mean, I've been right about a lot of things, frankly. I should be a newscaster because I called it before the news.
I watch this stuff. You know, I'm like a guy with vision.
I have an instinct for this kind of thing.
I'm good at war. I've had a lot of wars of my own. I'm really good at war.
In my book, I predicted terrorism.
It's a rigged system. I think I've done a great service by pointing this out. I was the one that really broke the glass ceiling on behalf of women. I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
Did a great job in Texas, a great job in Florida.
I truly believe that the first 100 days of my administration has been just about the most successful in our country's history.
It looked like a million and a half people.
Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
I understand steaks. It's my favorite food, and these are the best.
That keeps me from running.
Can you believe it?
Well, yeah, indeed. No, actually, not anymore. You're not Donald, so. And he is now best at getting his ass beaten by Biden. And is he, I don't know, Kamala or Kamala? I like Kamala. I like that better because it's more sort of exotic. So I'm going to go, I'm going to call Kamara, I think, from now on. and indeed, why? Because I can, mostly. But I'm going to bring on my own. I we can't really make Xtina, it doesn't sound exotic. It just sounds like.
Come on, I'm with you.
After all this time, and I never, I never actually cottoned on, but you're just an ardent Trump stan, aren't you?
I'm just a what? I'm a what?
Yeah. An ardent Trumpster. You and your boyfriend are out. And I never made the connection. And I apologize. I should have been speaking a bit slower to you and not using big words. So I'm very sorry about that. It does explain, to be fair, it explains a hell of a lot. It really does explain a lot.
No, I cannot say that I am a Trumpster. However, I am not a big Biden fan either. I mean, to be honest, I do remember thinking, God, are these my only choices?
I know. Well, I mean, obviously, Joe Biden has got one immense advantage, and that is that he is not Donald Trump. But by the same token, I'd have happily sort of voted for a small turd on the sidewalk, to be honest. To be fair, he probably would have done a better job than Donald Trump, so there is that.
As interesting and as much as I laugh at the clip that you play of the, he's got the best words, it cracks me up, especially when he says, I am good at war. I'm just like, oh my God.
I'm the best at building walls. And funnily enough, the wall ain't built and it ain't getting built. So that's not happening either.
I do think that, because we know how we do know that the presidents do, in fact, listen to our show. We do need to get a Biden clip.
Joan Kamala, thank you for tuning in. I know they're busy at the moment. I know they will always take an hour and a half out on a Thursday evening to listen to the show. So
who doesn't? Yeah. So I'm going to have to find a good little clip there that we can play to support our buddy Sleepy Joe. I do think we
Sleepy Joe. And again, if you've not already done it, here's an opportunity for somebody. It's an opportunity missed. If somebody needs to do a parody, and as long as it's not Weird Al, can't stand the man, he's a talentless hack. Somebody needs to do a parody of Wake Up Sleepy Gene by the Monkees, but Wake Up Sleepy Joe. That would be brilliant. So anybody out there, any parodyists, I know a couple. If you're listening, there's your project for the next week. And if somebody can do that, then send it in and we will put it on the show.
If I had time,
I'd do it myself. But sadly, time is not something I have an awful lot of right now. Oddly enough, busy.
Yeah. I know every single week when you say, didn't we just do this a couple of days ago? And I don't know where the time is going. And it seems like it was just, October, and now we're at the end of January. And oh, God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't we say that we wanted to, try to get the things done by the end of this month that were supposed to be done at the end of the year? So I think we're going to manage that one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not putting anything in writing, to be honest. I'm not agreeing to that.
Yeah, well, again, with everything that's going on and, the virus and the pandemic and everything, I think that, we do get a little leeway there. I think that, you can even say it's been a heck of a year or so. So I don't think anybody is, too upset with us for,
And suddenly here we are on... three quarters of the way through January, and it's like, wow, where did that happen? And I take the kids today, it'll be certainly Valentine's Day, and then of course it's summer break, and then it's Christmas again. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why I bother taking the bloody tree down, to be honest. I might have just left it up.
No, ours went down on the 4th, and I'm sad. Now when we, we come home at night or something, and the whole block, it just seems darker and dreary and sad because there are no Christmas lights, and I'm sad. I miss them. I do.
Yeah. It's kind of quiet, but then again, by the time Christmas is done, I'm glad to see the back of it. To be honest, I'm done. I'm not a big Christmas person, as you well know.
I do, but not, and I am. That's why this works so well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, speaking of kids, though, you mentioned kids. My son, my baby, turned 17 yesterday.
Wow! Happy birthday, dude.
I know. It feels so weird.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, his sister had a lot of fun telling him that he's just a year away from, us booting him if we wanted to. So he better straighten up. And I was like, ooh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, well, she's how old?
She's
22. She needs 22. To pay attention to that as well.
Yeah, but she's
my son turned 18 last year. You know, my daughter's 12-ish. Wow. Again, I remember scraping their bottom not that long since, you know. It's like, it'll not be long before they're scraping mine. So, you know, what goes around comes around is what I say.
I think when I met you, she was only 7 or 8 or something. So in my mind...
Yeah,
she can't be going to be 12 this year. There's no way. It's no way.
No, in my mind, like no. I mean, she's just grown in. She's suddenly grown up, and you know, by the time she hits being a teenager, you know, we started the teen drama already. I mean, that's just, you know, she's been. In fact, I got the call. It was bound to happen. I got the call. You know, she's been in contact with some kid who had a fucking sniffle or something. So. She has to quarantine, so she's at home, and by the power of tech, she's causing trouble at school, and she's not even there.
Wow.
But
here's the
thing. They said that she's got to quarantine until next Wednesday. It's supposed to be 14 days. They said, her quarantine period started a week ago when we backtracked it, but how can she have been in quarantine when she's just got... And I had this conversation with the school nurse, and I don't think she was the brightest button on the shirt, I'm afraid. And it's like, we're just going, and she obviously clearly didn't. And then she tried to explain to me how viruses work. It's just like, don't, seriously, do not do that, ever.
Yeah,
It's consequences
when the school
at home
year started.
And the funny thing is, she finished the school day by like 1. So she's happy. She's having a right time.
Yeah. When it started out as the distance learning, my son was doing horribly. He really was. And I think he's kind of got the hang of what's going on now, and he's doing a lot better. Brought those grades up, most of them anyway. And now they are just going back now to no more. Well, some of the kids are still doing distance learning, but he's got his choice. You know, he can go, you know, full time if he wants to. And I think he's seen that, he can lay around in his PJs and, you know, in between classes, he's playing his guitar and stuff. I think he kind of wants to stay home now. And I'm like, go to school.
Yeah.
So he's...
I mean, my daughter, no, back at school because she wants to be causing trouble in person, you know, because she can cause more disruption and drama in person. So, to be fair, she likes the social interaction, so she needs that. Mm-hmm. So she'll be back next Wednesday till I get the call again, you know.
I thought I'd
let you speak, you know.
I still say it every single Thursday, and for me, and I do it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm so excited. It's, you know, the weekend. It's not really the weekend. We still have one more full day of work, and so
I know. I really, really needed today to be Friday, and it isn't. So big disappointment. Big disappointment. I mean, I've got to do it all over again. So, but the weekend is almost there. Is almost there.
It is.
Anywho, what have we got on the show this week? did. If anything.
No. We have a great show. We have a bunch of guests, and I'm very excited.
We better have a great show. Otherwise, I'm going to bed. To be honest, you have to keep me entertained for the next hour and a half, so it might be bloody good.
No, it's going to be. We have authors from our new anthology, The Toilet Zone, number 2. And before I bring them on, I was all, well, we're not going to have them all on at the same time. But before we start, I'm excited because we have Isaiah Young, who did the audiobook for the first book, and I thought he was amazing, and I was just so super excited that I signed him to book number 2. So, I'm excited.
He's done a couple for us, hasn't he? And So, when COVID has lifted, I'll hit him up, and we're going to have some beer and wings.
You
can find a sports bar. Being Houston, there's plenty of those about, I can tell you.
All right, we're going to bring on our first, I'm hoping it's the right one.
I think we should.
Okay, our first guest tonight is one of the authors of the, one of the contributors for the Toilet Zone, number 2, Jerry R. Gray. Woo!
Hello, I'm hoping this is Jerry. Hello.
Hello.
It is.
Hey.
The number I had is not this one, but lovely to hear. And I'll just correct Xtina because, you know, you cannot get the staff these days. Not only is Jerry one of the contributors, Jerry is the wonderful person who compiled and edited the whole damn book. So,
Jerry, we are not worthy.
How are you this evening?
I'm fine, thanks, James. How are you, and how are you, Xtina?
Don't get me started. Don't get me started. What a week.
I think I'm scattered. Like, I'm the one who normally, you know, really puts this thing together, and I'm going, oh, God, I hope that's her. And, you know, so, yeah, I feel very scattered. That's how I feel. It's been a very scattering day.
Welcome to my world. Welcome to my world. So, Jerry.
Yes.
Toilet Zone number 2. I mean, Toilet Zone, the first one was a massive hit. The Toilet Zone number 2 is actually in the running for a Stoker Award, which is phenomenal. I've got to ask, we had a lot of submissions. How did
I didn't hear you. You're breaking up.
Did I break up? Can you hear me now?
Kind of.
I was going to say, how did you manage to help?
Oh, I only got half of that.
Yeah, I didn't catch it either. I'm not sure. Did Jerry pick out the stories for the Toilet Zone?
Yes, I did.
I think maybe that was what he was asking, like how you went about picking out what stories would go into it.
There were so many wonderful stories that were submitted. It was really tough to just pick a limited number, but I had fun reading every story that was submitted. Even the ones that didn't make it into the anthology, I still enjoyed reading those as well. And it was a lot of fun to put it together.
Yeah,
I think it turned out great. I love the cover. I really do.
Oh, my God. I do, too. I have the first book on my shelf, and I cannot wait to get volume 2 on my shelf as well. But, I have put together some of the anthologies for Hellbound, and it's one of the fun parts is going through the stories. And, there have been certain anthologies that I've done, and, you get to a point where you're like, I can't fit any more stories in here. But there are so many good ones. It is very difficult to choose sometimes. When there's such great stories. And then there are times that, you know, I will decide, okay, that one's going in, and, you know, I've only read a page or two, but I'm like, okay, yeah, that one's definitely going in. But then I find myself, I'm still reading. I'm like, oh, I have to go on now. I have to, you know, read something. So there are some great stories. So, yeah.
Yeah, it can be kind of difficult sometimes making a decision, especially towards the end when you know you only have so much room left and you can only accept so many more stories, and then you're going to go over the maximum number, and then you get all these good stories that come in, and oh no, which one? Toss a coin.
That's exactly what it's like. I'll be in the emails, and I'm looking through stories, and I'm like, well, you know, I'll see a name, and I'm like, well, I know they write really great stories, and then, you know, and then it'll be like almost like process of elimination. Then I get to that end and I'm like, oh, but there's probably these gems that I don't even know about in here. And then I'll go looking, and then the next thing I know, and I'm like, I think we might need a volume two, whatever, because we have just way too many. But, you know, that's I guess that's a good problem to have, you know. Do we
it
think
is.
There's going to be a Toilet Zone volume two, James? Three. I meant volume three. Are we going to have volume three?
Hello? Yeah, can you hear me now?
I can
hear
you now.
Brilliant. Yes, there will be a three. We need to think of a suitable title for it, actually. I was thinking of the Long Sit Down.
Maybe. That's a good one. And you know, but what we do with for a cover, we have the two ones that we have right now are just amazing. So how can we top that?
Well, we'll stick with the theme, I think. I mean, obviously, on the two. It was funny, actually. It's pretty much the same background as we had with the first one. Obviously, we wanted to keep the theme going. And I only just realized relatively recently that obviously we've got Rod Serling's shadow. It's actually coming out. It's actually a ladies' lavatory, which I did not realize. which is kind of cool. But we think of something suitable, again, keeping with the theme. So, yeah, definitely. There's got to be another
one. How about Toilet Zone 3, The Royal Flush?
I like
Ooh,
it.
Ooh, I like that.
I like it.
Great. Yes.
The other one could be Toilet Zone 3, The Big Shit. maybe not as popular, though, that idea. But,
So, Jerry, do you have an excerpt to read for us?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. The story is called The Taphophile, and that means a person with a fondness for or is attracted to graves, tombs, and or funerals. And, cemetery photography is one of my passions, so that's what inspired me to write the story. It's about a cemetery photographer in a cemetery who witnesses a murder, and then things just go downhill from there. So, okay. I was photographing vistas from the top of a pine-covered hill at the other end of the cemetery when my ears were suddenly filled with loud rock and roll music. I instinctively turned my head in the direction from which the sound came and observed the same black Corvette that had passed by me earlier pull over to the side of the road at the bottom of the hill. It sat there for several minutes with its engine running and radio blaring, before the door on the passenger side flew open and the blonde-haired woman bolted from the vehicle, screaming wildly on the top of her lungs. The driver's door swung open and the dark-haired man jumped from the car and took off after the fleeing woman. He quickly caught up to her, and then, to my absolute horror, I watched him place what appeared to be a long white extension cord around her neck and begin violently choking her with it. She struggled for a bit, kicking and clawing at her assailant, and finally collapsed upon the ground. the man stuffed the cord into the front pocket of his jacket and then started dragging the woman's limp body into the nearby woods. I could scarcely believe what my eyes had just witnessed. It was surreal, to say the least. Terror assaulted me like a monstrous bird flapping its wings within the confines of my chest, throwing my heartbeat into disarray. My palms broke out in a cold sweat. Pressure shot up, and I could feel an increase in muscle tension as my flight or flight response kicked in. Terrified, I took off running as fast as I could, my feet stumbling over grave markers and tree roots that protruded from the earth like gnarled fingers. All I could think about was getting out of Primrose Hill as fast as possible and notifying the police. I scolded myself for not getting the license plate number of the Corvette, even though I was too far away to make it out clearly. And then I regretted not heeding the warning of the ghostly voice in the mausoleum. I was convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt that it was portentous in its nature. Oh, why didn't I listen to it and leave when I had the chance? I grilled myself. I had been running for quite some time and felt as if I were going in circles. I then realized I had managed to get myself lost. I paused to catch my breath and collect my thoughts by a granite sarcophagus guarded by a large metallic angel whose copper alloys had oxidized to blue-green. My lungs felt as though they were on fire and a cold sweat beaded up on my forehead. I ordered my trembling body to calm down and tried to convince myself that everything would be all right. I would surely find my way back to my van sooner or later. I gazed around and was relieved to see no sign of the Corvette. I took a deep breath and then once again broke into a run. The road eventually forked and I had to choose whether to go left or to go right. A gut feeling, call it woman's intuition if you like, prompted me to go right, so I did. The scenery began to look familiar, which imparted a slight sense of comfort to me. I then spotted the mausoleum with the unlocked doors just up the road, and I knew I was heading in the right direction. "Yes," I shouted with a temporary burst of glee. I could feel a smile form on my lips despite the dread and panic raging deep within me. I began to run faster, and within a few minutes, my parked van came into view. Nothing could have been a more welcome sight at that moment. I suddenly felt overwhelmed by a flood of emotions, and tears welled up in my eyes. I unlocked the door to my van, rushed to get in, and then quickly locked the door. With my hand shaking, I inserted the key into the ignition and turned it. Like a scene out of some godforsaken horror movie, the van wouldn't start. "This can't be happening," screamed at the instrument panel. I tried to start it again, but the engine still refused to turn over. And then I spied the black Corvette ominously approaching. A wave of dread washed over me. The car pulled up alongside of me, and the driver got out and casually walked up to my door. I instantly recognized him as the man who had strangled the blonde. He rapped on my rolled-up window with his knuckles and asked if I were in need of any help. "Maybe he doesn't know that I saw what he did to that girl," I said to myself, trying to calm the terror that was rising up from the pit of my stomach. I turned to him and forced a smile upon my lips. "I'm fine, thank you," I lied, trying my utmost not to sound as though I had just witnessed a cold-blooded murder. "I'm just waiting for my husband." I gazed down at the watch on my wrist and then turned back to the man who was peering at me through the window. "He should be showing up any minute now." "Oh, you don't say," he asked me. The tone of his voice told me he didn't believe my story. I guess I was never very good at telling fibs. A frightful scowl contorted the muscles of his face. His watery blue eyes glared at mine, filling me with uneasiness. They were cold and empty eyes, like those of a predatory animal, and he was stalking his prey. I nodded my head, straining my face to maintain the smile. Panic was clawing at my insides, but I had to keep a calm exterior. if I exhibited even the slightest sign of fear, he would surely know that I had witnessed his unspeakable crime. He turned and began to walk back to the Corvette. I exhaled a sigh of relief. However, it proved to be premature, as he stopped after taking a few steps and then returned to my window. His face was now aglow with an eerie, feigned smile, as though he had slipped on a friendly-looking mask to gain my trust while he had his back to me. "You wouldn't by any chance be lying through your teeth to me, would you?" he inquired. "No," I lied through my teeth. "Of course not. I have no reason to do that." The smile on his face dissolved back into a snarl. His eyes turned menacing. "Women are always lying. It's what bitches do best," he yelled in an insane voice. "Filthy lying whores, every fucking one of them, and you're no different from the rest." "My husband is going to be arriving any second now," I reiterated, hoping it would prompt the man to leave, but it soon became apparent to me that he had no such intention. He went over to his car, opened the door on the passenger side, and retrieved something from the glove compartment. To my horror, he then returned to the spot where I was parked. His right hand was wrapped tightly around the handle of a black steel expandable baton. I blared my horn, but it didn't faze him in the least. With his teeth clenched, he swung the baton against my window, taking out a small chip of glass. I frantically pumped the gas pedal and tried the ignition key again and again, but the van stubbornly refused to start. There came another swing of the baton, and a crack resembling a spider's web fanned out with a loud thud. Shielding my face with the back of my hand, I let out a scream, and then another swing of the baton completely shattered the window, showering me with pieces of broken glass. I scrambled across to the passenger seat as he pulled up on the lock and opened my door. Like a wild animal, he lunged at me, but I managed to open the passenger door in the nick of time and fled from the van into the adjoining woods. Branches and prickly weeds scratched at my face and body as I ran like a doe from a hunter. The forest grew denser and darker, and I felt like a small, helpless creature being swallowed alive by some giant monster with a voracious appetite. I don't know for how long I had been running. It felt like an eternity. My leg muscles were on fire with pain. My stomach was cramping up, and my pounding heart felt ready to burst. The terror-stricken little voice in my head told me I had to keep moving, but my fatigued body demanded a rest. I paused for a brief bit to catch my breath, all the while keeping my ears alert to the sound of the killer's approaching footsteps. But all I heard was a loud droning coming from beyond a fern-guarded outcropping of low rocks. I don't know why, but I felt strangely compelled to follow the sound, as if my will was no longer my own.
I hate to do this, Jerry, but I think we're going to have to cut you off. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry.
That was great, though. Oh, my goodness. I feel like I'm there with her, and I'm going to read the rest of the story as soon as we cut to a break in a little bit, because I want to know what's going to happen. But that was awesome. That was great.
Oh, thanks.
No, yeah, I was, yeah. I was on the edge of my seat.
I know.
So,
I kept trying to...
I like his style. It reminds me of someone, and I can't quite place who. It'll come to me, but always a delight to read Jerry's stories, I have to say.
Oh, thank you.
One of the perks of the job is we actually, obviously, we get to read all these for free, which is great. So
I always liked with Jerry's writing, and I think this is probably because she's a poet as well. But when I'm reading it, I can almost get like a poetic thing. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but the words all just. There are times when I'm reading a story, I'm like, well, whoever wrote this definitely did not bother to try reading it out loud because it's kind of messy, you know? But
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
For some reason, Jerry's writing always, it always seems like it has a poetic spin on it for me. And
I think you're right. Which is obviously from an absolute non-poet, I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know poems awfully well.
That's very sweet of you to say that. Thank you so much.
I thank you so much, Jerry, for coming by tonight. I think we're going to have to say good night to you and get on to our next guest. And I wish we could all be on together, but it's so chaotic when we do that. We've tried before, and it's fun for me because I get to sit back and drink
It's messy.
A lot, but,
it just gets it's just like having a cockfight, four chickens in the ring, and just letting get on with it. You know, it's get your minds out of the gutter, lady.
Yeah.
Please, this is a family show.
Well, thank you for having me on the Panic Room again. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you for joining us. Have a great rest of your evening.
Thanks. You too, James. Bye.
Okay.
Good
bye.
Night.
We need our next. We need.
You're breaking up again. What is wrong with your thing tonight? I think you have the right number. So I'll just introduce our next guest. We have Rob Santana.
Can you hear me?
Yay! We can, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with James's phone tonight. But we used to have a cool thing that at the end of the show, he would just do like this weird robotic voice. And we have not done that in, I don't even know how long. And I started to miss it. You know, it became like part of the show. So I don't know if I like this breaking up thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why don't you tell me a little bit about your story in the Toilet Zone, Volume 2.
This one's about a kind of Frankenstein type of guy who turned dead dogs into semi-human beings. So dog with a man's face. And he sets it out to terrorize this divorced father and his 6-year-old daughter. It's kind of a revenge thing. But the divorced father, who's, you know, was a lawyer and sprung his brother to jail. I hope you can hear me okay, because I'm a little, I had some oral surgery, and am I coming across okay?
Oh, yeah. No, you sound fine. You sound fine. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought. it's a very short story, and I just wanted to keep it simple. It's just a terror thing, and it's like a kind of a domestic horror story.
Yeah, I'm looking at your excerpt. It looks pretty pretty short. Do you want to go ahead and read it for us?
Try to keep it short. This is actually towards the climax. If that's okay, I don't have to start in the beginning.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Just go for it.
Can you hear me? Okay. All right, can you hear me okay?
Yep, you're coming through just fine.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Okay, what are you talking about, Sarah? It's just a stray dog. He let out a strangled yelp and pointed to the window. I'm wondering if I can stop you, if I can have Jerry read this. Is that okay? Is that too much? Does she have the script?
I don't know if she does. She probably has the book, but I don't know if she has you know, what you're going to read. No, that's fine. If you didn't want to, that's
no,
fine.
Let me try again. She let out a strangled yelp and pointed to the window. He looked over his shoulder. Only the horizon of distant, naked trees met his gaze. I saw him, his daughter said. He looked right at me. Who saw you? Teddy. He smiled at me. Cliff shook her and began, and she began crying. Stop this, Sarah, I mean it. Teddy's gone. Go back to your room. She sprang to his bed instead and cowered under the blanket. Stay with me, she mumbled. Cliff stared at her, then at the vista beyond the window. I'll go see for myself. Stay put. He skipped to the kitchen, pulled out the largest knife, and crept to the screen door. His heart thumped like a disco beat as he throttled the knob. He eased open the door. The dog's labored huffs tinged the shadows. Cliff gripped the knife and took a step, his black pajamas soaked in sweat. He froze. A shadow flitted past the crumpled flowered bed that rested against the white picket fence. From behind him, Sarah's voice rose above the wind. Common sense told Cliff that it was not an invocation coming from his daughter, that it was his mind playing tricks on him. So why was Sarah bellowing in a way that it could reach a neighbor's ear? Making those sounds in her throat made his hair singe. How could vocal cords coming from a little girl create such an eerie transmission? He stepped out past the screen door and whirled on the window Sarah had stationed herself behind. Her eyes were vast, rattling, focused on the darkness surrounding her father. Her face looked pale, steeped in a strange angle, pressed against the window. He felt as if his daughter was waiting for something dreadful to happen to him. The wind kicked up on cue. A cushioned grunt, followed by a sustained growl, came from somewhere behind the fence. How far beyond, Cliff could not tell. The vicious gale made for indistinct measuring of sound.
This dog, this
freak of nature, was 5 feet to the right or left of him, ready to pounce, its teeth bared. Sarah resumed making those noises in her gullet. A nearby cat scooted away, not looking back. Sarah, I mean it. Stop it. Stop making that noise in your throat. What is that? What is it that you're trying to say? Who are you talking to? Stop it, for God's sake. Go to your room. Something moved at the end of the fence. He moved closer, his hands sweating, his eyes widened. There it was. Oh, sweet, merciful Jesus. The dog's smallest tongue locked in and out of its thin, sensuous mouth, then dangled over a perfectly formed row of teeth. Its human-like ears clicked back upon hearing Cliff's receding footfalls. Its blue eyes were massive and fixed. Sputum rolled down its mouth. Cliff could decipher the stitches on the dog's neck before the half-hour plunged at him.
Yeah, I'm getting a total Pet Cemetery vibe here. That's pretty creepy. That was great.
Do I have time? Linda Harris. By Sunday, Linda Harris held full custody of Sarah. The police report was fuzzy. Her ex-husband's throat had been torn open. Loss of blood ended his life. A renegade dog, she told him, modifying Sarah's counts. What a smart little girl, they said, dialing 911 soon after her father arrived in a pool of his own blood. Her new pet, however, could never replace Teddy. The pit bull was never found. But Sarah peered out the window every night, hoping Teddy would return and smile at her again. That's it.
I cut you off a little fast there. Awesome, though. No, I'm definitely getting some Pet Cemetery vibes there. Awesome. Or maybe Cujo, too. Cujo, Pet Cemetery, all those creepy, you know, dogs are just scary. That was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think that I think we're going to have to go to a quick break, and then we're going to have to come back with our other two guests. But thank you very much, Rob, and I'm hoping that we can have you back on the show, maybe for a Toilet Zone Part, you know, 3.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Thank you. Good night. James, are you still there? Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Gee, but it's great after being out late, walking my baby back home. Arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home. We go along harmonizing a song, or I'm reciting a poem. Owls go by and they give me the eye, walking my baby back home. We stop for a while, she gives me a smile, snuggles her head to my chest. We start into bed, and that's when I get her talcum all over my vest. After I kind of straighten my tie, she has to borrow my comb. One kiss, then I continue again, walking my baby back home.
Light. She says if I try to kiss her, she'll cry. So I dry her tears all through the night.
La da da dee, la da dee da da dee. La da dee. We stop for a while, she gives me a smile. Snuggles her head to my chest. We start into bed, and that's when I get her talcum all over my vest. After I kind of straighten my tie, she has to borrow the comb. One kiss, then I continue again, walking my baby back home. Walking my baby back home.
Da! Welcome back to part two.
Well, we're back, and you can hear me. Can you hear me, Xtina?
Well, I can. I didn't hear any breakup that time.
Oh, I don't know. Technical issues. Gremlins in the works. But, we had two phenomenal readings. So I did enjoy the last one. That was, like you say, very Pet Sematary. Very. Mm-hmm. Although I have to say, I'm going to cut, again, vilification of pit bulls. And as a pit bull owner, I have to take umbrage at that. They are not the devil dogs that people try to take out, and I stand by it. There is no such thing as a bad dog, only bad owners.
No.
So
you were saying that that pit bulls aren't all that bad, and I have to say that we have three ankle biters here that will tear you up. I mean, the boyfriend was trying to give one of them I don't even know what it was, some kind of scrap, and she damn near took his thumb off, It's still sore days later.
Yeah. Well, that's it. The
way
smaller
more
dogs
vicious.
More vicious. But people who want pit bulls to, they crop their ears, they crop their tails, and it's just, and they deliberately abuse them from being puppies.
Yeah,
so they grow up to be mean. They grow up to be aggressive towards people because that's how they're brought up. Ours, we've had her since she was 5 weeks old, and is the softest. Well, you've seen pictures of her. Softest, sweetest little thing. We are house training at the moment, and she's doing really well. And it was just funny yesterday. She'd just been out, and she came in. My son came home from work, and we were stood talking. I think because she wasn't getting attention, she just literally squatted down by his foot and peed in the middle of the kitchen floor. And I think we call it a protest wee. That was like, I'm not getting attention. No. Right. So you clean this up, you bastards, So, but other than that, any dog you can, you raise it wrong, it's going to be aggressive, but.
Yeah.
Really,
speaking of pets, Misha had her, I think I told you, she had her second perfect shed for us, and I was really excited. She wasn't scheduled to eat for a couple more days, but she was still pretty hungry. She has the two separate hides, and she goes over to the cold side, and she just peers out of it, and that's usually how we know it's feeding time for her. And we get the little mouse on the tongs, and we dangle it. 6 seconds it took her. She was on it. She was just,
there you go.
Yeah, it was great. I was like,
excellent.
Oh, my poor baby was starving. Okay. Yes. Aww. On with the show.
On with the show.
We have our third contributor from the Toilet Zone part. I did break up.
Yeah, and we're now gonna call them the Toileteers. We have our next Toileteer.
Perfect. Our next Toileteer is Drew Nix.
Woo! Hello.
Hoping everybody can hear me.
I can. Yeah.
We can.
I think everybody's got good audio except me. I'm the only one with technical issues this evening. So thank you for joining us, Drew.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be amongst like-minded people. There are two things I just want to throw out before I even, get into anything here. First of all, with the whole preamble about Trump, the first thing I have to say, my favorite bit from him is always about big, strong guys with tears in their eyes. If you ever get the chance to see somebody's recut of all of his speeches, there's always a big, strong guy with tears in his eyes in the crowd somewhere.
Excellent.
Second of all, when it comes to dogs, I spent 13 years working at a humane society, and let me tell you, you're completely onto something there with bad owners, not bad dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I agree.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I've been around dogs most of my life, you know, and you treat them right, they're fine, you know. I've had big dogs, small dog, and I hated it, but I just small dogs. I was savaged by a Jack Russell as a child, so kind of put me off a bit.
Nine times out of ten, when I was working at a humane society there, pit bull, never going to bite you. Chihuahua, every single time.
Yep.
It's true. We have three little ones, and my little dog, he's close to 10, 11, 12, something like that, but you just accidentally brush up against him, and he thinks you're going to harm him. He will bite you. It's like, it's just the air around you, Charlie. I didn't even touch you yet. His like jaws are smacking shut. So yeah,
they don't
assholes, aren't they?
they don't seem to catch on to that. I mean, that's always been my experience.
Yeah, I do love them, but they're such assholes.
Yeah, let's say unique personality.
No, I think assholes is more suitable.
So tell us about your story in the toilet zone, Drew.
Well, Hastings, I don't know if, because I'm calling from the mighty wilds of Canada, as a lot of people know it, but Hastings, we've got this really notorious little section here in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm not from Vancouver, but I've spent a good number of summers out there visiting relatives, and East Hastings has kind of become a haven for the downtrodden. How else do I phrase this? You know, the derelicts of society, and it's always been kind of, I mean, it's ultimately sad, but I've always kind of wanted to set a story within these sort of confines. So I sat down one day and I melded two ideas together that I never thought would have meshed, and indeed they did. So, and I also just wanted to point out very quickly, my story here in the Toilet Zone number two, or part two, depending upon how you want to look at it. This is my third story accepted by Jerry, and I am forever grateful for the things that she's done for me here by giving me a chance to express my voice. So
we love her. We do. We love Jerry. If you're ready to read your excerpt, we would.
All right.
Love that.
So, story is titled Hastings. Silas awoke beneath his tarp lean-to with the scent of fresh rain and uncollected trash all around him. He rubbed bloodshot eyes and scratched at the multitude of scabs on his arms. After a few moments, he rolled out into the gray dawn. The sight that greeted him was typical for any regular day on East Hastings Street. While some mild contentment was present, sadness and anger were far more prevalent. Men wandered about in the damp air like zombies, glassy-eyed and with a shambling gait. Some of these men had streaks of fresh blood streaming down their arms, evidence of several failed injections. One woman, walking further down the way, cradled what Silas knew was a plastic baby. Even from his vantage point a half block distant, he heard her hollering terms of endearment at her child. As Silas's world came fully into view, so too did the sweats and shakes. Awake for less than half an hour and already in need of a fix, he fought the feeling back as well as he could. to get that next fixed, he'd have to make some quick cash. That might take some work. He adjusted his stained BC Park shirt and torn sweatpants before he set off into the new day. Passing deteriorated buildings with smashed windows, Silas briefly wondered about their former opulence. Just 30 years prior, these buildings in this area had a very different life. Grand hotels and celebrated storefronts made this place the talk of the town. Now it was the talk for different reasons. Silas arrived at the Tent City in front of the old Astor Hotel. This was the largest tent city on East Hastings. The general consensus was that it had formed some 20 years ago, though no one was totally sure. A pecking order ruled this settlement, and Silas barely ranked. This was okay. At this hour, the day was only beginning. He watched the rabble roll out from their homes onto the sidewalk. He also saw three unmoving forms lying prone at different points of the sidewalk, likely victims of overdose. Silas unconsciously scratched his arm. He was looking for one man in particular, a man who was just as desperate as he. He scanned the crowd, looking for the familiar face. He didn't see him until he looked further up the street. The man was grubby and crusted with filth. His torn, army-style jacket was covered with variously mismatching and faded patches. His matted beard hung low upon his face. As Silas approached, the man had picked up a thawed freezy from the gutter. He closely examined its contents. Gravel and dirt floated in the crimson liquid to his lips and drained it in one quick sip. Andy! Silas called. How's it going today? Andy dropped the empty plastic sleeve into the gutter and turned to Silas. I spent last night in a ditch, Andy replied, but I've had worse nights. Silas drew Andy into a close embrace. The scent of the two combined would remind one of a restaurant dumpster on a boiling summer day. It's good to see you, Silas said. I've missed you. Andy grunted noncommittally. Andy had never been one for emotions, at least for as long as Silas had known him. Every now and then, Silas wondered what Andy had been before he ended up here. The shakes hit Silas again. It was time to get to business. I don't know about you, Silas said as he pulled away from Andy, but I'm getting the jitters. I need a fix. Me too, Andy replied. It's been 18 hours too long. I've got a hot tip. Silas stood motionless, listening intently. Yep. Met this feller last night. Real strange type. Ain't never seen him around here before. Kept babbling to himself like he was fighting with voices in his head. Weird shit, man. Weirdest part was his clothes didn't look that bad. Still had a nice press to his suit. Still had his tie all up. Reminds me of a guy I saw like that a couple weeks ago. Now that guy was something else. He was... Silas snapped his fingers in front of Andy's face, trying to draw him back to reality. Andy would wander in his conversations if you weren't on him to stay focused. Oh, right, Andy said, returning to existence. This fellow was talking about a warehouse not far from here. Wouldn't say what it was, but from the way he was acting, it's worth a pretty penny. Silas looked at Andy with a perplexed expression. So why didn't he take it? Andy shrugged. Don't know. He didn't say that either. Looked like he was riding pretty high when I saw him. Fucking junkies, man. A smirk crossed Silas's face as he thought of the irony. But still, he was intrigued enough to follow up on this story. He nudged Andy. All right, you got me. Let's go have a look. Andy and Silas turned and made their way up the grunge-laden street. And that's where I'll leave off.
I was following along, and I'm thinking, but I don't want him to stop yet. You just keep going.
as much as I'd like to, ruins the suspense.
It's true. And you read it so good. I have to tell you, I I'm in charge of the audio department for Hellbound, and I get some really interesting auditions in, and some people I don't think they really grasp, you know, what people want when they're, you know, a listener. And I like the way you did the voices, and you know, I really like that. Sometimes you just get someone who just reads, and yeah, it sounds great, but you know, well, there's like no emotion or no, you know, anything in there. So you did great. I like that. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, I always enjoy reading that sort of stuff out loud. I mean, especially if people are going to get it. I probably wouldn't want to bring it out at church, but.
Yeah, I guess. Probably not. That would be awful. But no, that was great.
No,
but,
I'm gonna correct you. It'd be a fantastic idea, actually. I would read that
in
church. Oh God, yes, you go for it.
Well, we have so many churches in the town where I live, so, I mean, it's tempting, but I feel like they're going to drag me out kicking and screaming.
Yeah, burn you at the stake.
Yeah. It would make for an awesome
story. Well, they haven't
story,
done
though.
That for 300 or 400 years, as far as I know, but,
it's overdue then, isn't it? You know, it's a tradition they need to bring back.
I
absolutely hate to do this because you know, we're having so much fun, but I want to make sure we have enough time for our next guest. So I want to
absolutely.
Thank you so much, Drew. Yeah,
and
thank you so much,
Drew,
for coming on the show.
I want to thank Xtina and James for having me on here. It was a great pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you. And thank you for your awesome stories as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sure I'll be on here again.
I hope so.
Hopefully.
I hope so. I will look forward to it.
Definitely. Keep warm.
Yeah.
Gonna try.
Okay,
have
I will speak
night.
To you soon. And you. Bye-bye.
Good night, Drew.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that was a great, it's always, it's frustrating, you know, you're into it, and then stop.
Yes, they stop, yeah.
I just want to keep going. But like I say, you know, it's great.
We
want to copy the book, then you can have
one.
Yeah. So
yes.
There you go.
I'm going
there
to
you go.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, I'm done with a little bit of plowing through tonight because we've got so many books. Great. Who have we got on next, Xtina?
Our next guest is a guy who we both probably have had a lot of dealings with on Facebook and you know, with Hellbound and stuff. And it's, you know, great when we finally get to talk to them. Our last guest of the night is Josh Darling. Woo!
Hey.
Hello.
I'm caller.
Hey. I'm talking to Xtina before the show started. Obviously, we've corresponded on Facebook and whatnot, but I think this is the first time we've actually spoken.
Yeah. You know, and I really have to say, if it wasn't for Hellbound, I wouldn't be published. So I think
there you go.
Book 4 or 5 for me. So, because I'm always in bootleg horror, shopping list. While I'm plugging your titles here, Toilet
please
Zone.
Please do.
And then there was the other one. Oh, yeah, Madame Gray's Creep Show. So,
wait, you're forgetting one,
yes.
too.
Yes.
I mentioned to James. Yes, I mentioned to James. I remember you way back in Beautiful Tragedies.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
the poetry, yeah.
I loved your poetry. I was such a fan. I was. I was like, that's amazing. I loved it. So, and I will be working on putting together Beautiful Tragedies 2, hopefully this year. Hopefully it'll happen. So, yeah, that's definitely it's a long time coming, but I think we're ready.
I will definitely be. Just let me know when you're ready, and I will flood your inbox. Wow, that sounds
fantastic. Yeah, that exactly.
Yeah, I was not going to say.
Very rude,
like.
That, isn't it?
Oh,
you know, I'm gonna steal that euphemism. I like it. Hey, next time I'm, you know, with a lady, I'm gonna whisper in her ear. You know, I'm gonna flood your inbox.
Yes. Oh, it's great. It's great. Mm. I'll never forget.
I like it.
So, Josh, tell us about your story in the Soil Zone, number two.
So, God, I actually got an invite for this, which is kind of really cool because I haven't been subbing a lot. I've been getting invites to anthologies a lot lately, which really strange feeling to not have to look for work. But there was a really short deadline, and, you know, I love cliches. And I started out with kind of a cliched situation, and I just wanted to play with it a little bit. I am going to just kind of give the setup for the story because, you know, there's time constraints and, you know.
Right, right.
Why give you those first 1,000 words? Who the hell needs them, right?
It's true.
The story is about a crystal meth addicted Florida lot lizard who is picking up truckers, and there's this kind of young 20-something guy who's sort of attractive, and she's like, wow, even though you're paying me for it, you're not hideous. So that's kind of the setup of the story here. So let me know when I should start running or reading.
I mean,
sorry.
Either or.
Yeah, you can start right here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Standing next to his truck, she chugged the Pabst. Finishing, she burped and tossed the can under the truck. The truck and trailer were white, with blacked-out windows. A 6-inch cross was on the driver's side door, and black letters under it. Jesus Christ is Lord in heaven. Under that, another cross. She's an old rig, but I bought her outright with a lot of hard work. I bet you did. He climbed the steps, unlocking the door, opened it, and then back down, allowing Darla's ascent into the cab. Inside, she scooted to the passenger seat. On the dashboard was a Bible and an 8-inch-tall, agonized Jesus nailed to a cross. The handle was snapped off the door, making getting out impossible. Travis got in, blocking the one escape route. Her hooker senses tingled with an oh-fuck feeling. He was a psycho, and she'd let her guard down because he looked like someone she'd want to fuck. In her distress for drugs and sustenance, she ignored anything that might be a red flag. In the driver's seat, he locked his door. He turned to her. That was missing when I got the truck. Bullshit, she thought, then said, you got meth? I have something better. Like a 12-inch Bowie knife to skin me with, she thought, then said, better? As I said, I have the straight dope, and that's the truth, the straight dope from the Lord. She clutched the armrest. Are you a serial killer? What? No. When I said I wanted to talk to you about what's in store for you, I meant it. Darla, this isn't about matters of the flesh. Freaky shit costs more. If you want to pee on me, that's an extra 20, and an extra 40 for it in my mouth. I'll poop on you, but I don't do people pooping on me. I want to take a moment to get freaky and tell you about my Lord and personal Savior, Jesus Christ. She wondered if he was going to kill her in the name of God. If you don't want to get high and do sex to me, stop. I'll fuck you up if you think you're going to hurt me. Give me 5 minutes to let me and Jesus change your life. Jesus was a bitch. Odin came back after being dead 9 days from hanging on a tree. And that's more hardcore than 3 days on a stick. One of her mother's boyfriends was released from prison, covered in Aryan Brotherhood tattoos. Watching daytime TV and free racing crystal, he'd spout off about the Viking gods. He sounded like any other idiot Bible thumper. You believe in Odin? I don't believe in anything, Mister, I'm asking nice. Let me out. You know, you have an eternal soul, and Jesus loves you, and he died for you. Don't you want more from this life than drugs and prostitution? I enjoy drugs, and I don't have any guilt about whoring. I know women are supposed to cry if they turn tricks, but I got a man's brain about it. When I get paid to fuck, I'm high-fiving myself. And I really like meth, which damages your brain and rots your teeth and your soul. Maybe. Let me out. I'm starting to fiend. Don't you want freedom from your addiction? In Proverbs, it says a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. That's crazy. You can't break into no city. I ain't a man. I got tits, see? She pulled down her tube top, exposing her breast. And I can't quit drugs. It's like they say in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Quitters never win, and winners never quit. He bowed his head away from her. You afraid of my titties? You can touch them if you like. You can even suck on them like you're thirsty for milk. He shook his head. I weep for you. In Leviticus, it tells us, do not defile your daughters by making her a prostitute, or the land shall be filled with prostitution and wickedness. I don't think I can have kids, so I don't worry about my daughters making a land of wickedness. But if I had daughters, and they was happy hooking, I'd be happy for them. He gasped. What about disease? God created STDs to punish sins of the flesh. I don't think I can get those. Some of the dicks I've seen look like Freddy Krueger's face, and I ain't got no itch. You don't get them because God has a special plan for you. From her pelvis to her ribcage, nothingness consumed her guts. She wanted this to go easy, but she wouldn't be able to keep it together much longer. Cover yourself, he said. Either you let me go or make me cover up. Look, they're so big, I can get them in my mouth. She raised a breast to her lips and sucked her nipple. It popped out of her mouth with a wet kissing noise. You ain't the slightest bit hard. I bet you're real big. You're acting crass and unladylike. Unladylike is for women owned by men, wives and shit. I don't want to be no lady, and I'm not sure if I'm a person. But it's going to cost $20 if we get our fuck on or not. I'm not joking. I don't want you going to hell and having your flesh roasting in a lake of fire for eternity. I beg of you, save yourself and repent. Beg his forgiveness, and you will be forgiven. Screw this. Let me out. Salvation can be yours. What if I can't get saved? If I'm not a human, I might not have a soul. What then, Mr. Smart Guy? He wasn't high. She wasn't high. Devouring him would be bland. That's nonsense, and you know it. Don't be afraid of the love of Jesus Christ. The vacuum inside her tore in every direction. No matter how many different things she tried, only one thing would stop it. Pulling the tube top down.
I hate this work. I know. Well, you know, you left us in like a cliffhanger, so everybody's going to want to know what happens next. So they're going to have to go out and buy the book so they can find out. I want to know what happens next, but I can find out.
Sex, drugs, rock and roll, flesh eating. You know, typical.
That
one
was
tonight.
Awesome.
That was very good. Beautifully read
pretty.
As well. Rather frighteningly, I was there in the cab with them. So, I mean, to be fair, you had me.
That's another 20.
Yeah, you apparently, as Ben told me that. Yeah, you had me at meth addicted lot lizard. I mean, that is just like, you know.
Welcome to Florida.
Exactly. That
yes.
Sounds great. Only in Florida, huh?
What part of Florida do you live in, Josh?
I'm in Tampa.
Are you? I lived a good number of years in St. Pete. And
St. Pete is a really cool place.
I lived
for years, and I'm in Tampa now. In fact, really quick, because I know she's listening in the hospital, I just kind of want to shout out to my girl and tell her I love her because she's in the hospital.
Aw.
So.
Oh, that's so sweet. What's her name?
Heidi.
Hi, Heidi. Hi from the panic room.
so, but yeah.
What do you,
sorry. Pardon?
Yeah. What are you working on now? Like, what kind of projects you got going on?
I have an anthology that I don't know if I can talk about it yet, because I'm really excited about that, and I am also working on a novel, and I'm working on it backwards. I actually wrote the screenplay and then was like, hey, I'm probably not going to get a budget on this, so let me write the novel. It's called Cage of Blood, and I can't really say much more, but I'm really excited about it. And, I mean, you know, I just kind of tell people it's just like Twilight, except for the girl gets vivisected.
Excellent.
Interesting. Yeah.
Excellent. So, obviously you can't divulge it. As soon as it's out, then you need to come back on the show, and then you can tell us all about
Definitely.
It.
Definitely.
Or the next time I do anything for Hellbound Books, I love working for you guys.
I can't believe this is your first time on the show, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
right?
No, I've known you guys, I think, years, because I don't how
Bootleg
Horror was like 3-4 years ago. Shopping List was about that too.
Yeah,
they were some of our early ones. Yeah, definitely.
And
oh,
exciting news! I just signed a narrator for Shopping List, so I'm excited about that.
Yay.
And he's really good too. Yeah. So
excellent.
You'll hear your words. Yeah. Mm. But No, do you write poetry often? Because that was the first time I had ever read your anything by you was the poem, and I was blown away. So if you don't, you need to keep going. You know, you need to write more.
I love writing poetry. It's just I got a lot going on right now. It's just
Sometimes I find that, you know, a poem is so much more, it's shorter, obviously, than sitting down writing a short story or novel or something. And it's also a good way to purge, you know, to get out some emotions or something. So it's great. And I encourage you to do it more because I loved your poetry. It's really good.
Thank you. And I try not to take it seriously. That's the thing is that I see poetry as like something that's pure fun, which I know is like the exact opposite of how poetry is treated.
Oh, no, that's
the depth and the analysis of it, and it's like, no, this can also be fun too. You can also have a good time with this. So.
Right, I agree. Well, I hate to do this, but I think we're just about out of time for our show, and thank you so much for coming on the show, Josh. Yeah, James is right. I cannot believe that we're just now having you on. So we will definitely have to do this again. I can't wait because we had a great time.
Yeah, we've got a great show tonight. Get him booked on again soon because we're not finished
yet.
I want to know more.
Definitely.
Thank you guys
definitely
so much
will.
For having me. Seriously.
Thank you for joining.
My whole day.
It's been an absolute pleasure
to
finally get to speak to you, mate.
I feel like I've met an old friend after like years.
I know. So I will pester Xenia to get you on very, very soon. When's your novel due out, by the way?
I have to finish writing it, so.
Oh, okay. Well, you need to do that. You crack on with that.
Because I've got the whole screenplay written, so I'm just taking a screenplay and turning it into a novel. It's not like, oh, what am I going to do next? It's okay, it's time to write this chapter.
Right,
yeah.
Off you go.
Yeah.
Right, well,
thank you so much, Josh.
We will speak to you again very soon.
Hey, you have a great night. Thanks.
And you. Cheers.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And so time has beaten us again, as it does, and it is time to say goodnight, Xenia.
Goodnight, Xenia.
Good night.